Welcome to Talking Points. I am Dr. Michelle, and we have an awesome guest today, Michael Clerk. And before we get into Mike Clerk, I want to first shout out William Patterson University, especially Yeleni Gunnell, the director of the Black Cultural Center there at William Patterson University. So we will get right into it. Mm-hmm. Hey, Mike, how are you?
Hey, Dr. Michelle, thanks for having me so much. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Mike, you are a financial advisor, you're a former educator, mm-hmm. and you are the CEO of, tell me what the name of the organization is again?
JC Gators, actually. I started the organization. Yeah, correct.
Jersey City Gators, right?
Yes,
so,
correct.
So talk a little bit about that, because I think that it speaks volumes to the person you are, the fact that you started an organization. I'm assuming this is for the youth.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about what this is, the mission is, and how it came to be.
Well, growing up in the inner city, sports played a big portion of my life. You know, honestly, I have stories and stories of things that I could have done or went the wrong way, but because I had football practice or because, I had a bigger purpose, sports kind of saved my life, helped me get to college. So I wanted to kind of give back to the inner city kids, give back to where I grew up, and give them opportunities. People don't realize a lot of times sports open up a lot of windows for our youth.
Absolutely.
So what we did, so I decided to go back home. I grew up in Jersey City, and we started a program, with football, the cheer program, and also the after school program where we help kids ages 5 to 13 years old. And at the height of the program, we had about maybe 250 kids.
How did that happen? Because, that of course there had to be some type of buy-in where you get 200 kids and you just start in this program. So how did you get the word out there, and what was the reception from parents and the community?
You know what? Just showing that many kids came out showed that it was a need. All right. You don't build something that fast or that type of speed without it being a need. And we saw a need. Mm. One, in a city, there's so many kids. You just walk through any inner city. You see kids running through the streets. You see kids playing, but they need structure. So all we did was give them an opportunity to have structured play. That was it. And as far as getting the word out, to the blessing, because I did grow up in Jersey City and I played football there. I knew a lot of people there through sports and connections. So I just kind of told them what I was doing, and people supported. People said, hey, listen, I understand what you're trying to do. And this person introduced me to this person. This person introduced me to this person. And lo and behold, the program was birthed.
How long ago did you start this?
About 7 years ago, actually. So I was the current president for about 5 years.
And so at this point, you passed it down to someone else, and it's still functioning and running almost the way you ran it when you first started it out.
Current. Well, they kind of they changed the name slightly just to give it a fresh spin, new uniforms and stuff. But the body of the program is still there. They're still doing a phenomenal job, and I applaud those guys.
This is great. Mm-hmm. So getting into that, because of course, coaching to me is I know I played sports, so when I think of coaching, I think of my dad. My dad was my first coach. And I played basketball, and I only fell in love with basketball because of my dad. And so I had a really, really strong relationship with my dad, still do over the years, and I've always had him around. And I wanted us to kind of talk about fatherhood. I know that you are a father. I'm proud of the work that you're doing with your children. It's not work, it's just being a father, but just what you're doing with your children, it's showing up. And so that's why I really wanted to kind of get a sense of what your perceptions are of what myths are out there that, involve Black men and being fathers, and how we're going to bust those myths and really bust it with some truth. So can you give us some ideas as to kind of what things are kind of perpetrating that you see and that you want to kind of let be known as not the truth?
Gotcha. Well, one of the myths of being a teen dad, I had my first son at 17, and being a teen dad, still being in school yourself, you're not fully developed. A lot of times people feel that you can't do a excellent job raising a son. I mean, if you look at the statistics, my son shouldn't be where he is today based on the numbers, right? Based on facts. But we didn't believe in that, you know. Having him young, I had to lean bigger on my village, right? So that's watching my dad, my granddad, you know, the different things they instilled in me. All I did was instill in him. You know, some of the myths are that, you know, there's not enough black dads in the home. And I think not enough. A lot of times we don't get enough credit, you know, a lot of times they don't get enough credit. There are some phenomenal dads out there doing phenomenal jobs, but because of these myths, because of these stereotypes, it's getting overlooked.
What stereotypes are you realizing, you know, is out there? Maybe you yourself experienced them, and or just coming, you know, speaking to other men that you're close with, you're hearing them speak this kind of lingo about things that that are being said to them or ideas that they're hearing outside?
Well, I don't know too many, I'm trying to think of stereotypes that comes to mind, but a lot of things that you hear that, one, there's not enough black dads in the home, you know, they're kind of missing, you know, dead or in jail or different things like that. And I think that's a big misconception. If you look at the numbers, far as black dads, especially now, we're more active, we're more involved, we're more doing great things in the community. So I think that's one thing that we have to put behind us. And, you know, looking for the current situation that's going on around, you start seeing more dads get involved. You start seeing, you look at social media, I think it should be promoted more. You know, we got Father's Day, but I believe that we should have a African-American Father's Day.
I hear that. Mm-hmm. No, you know, I think for me, when I, because I even, like you said, going on social media, you know, people on Father's Day, I saw a comment and it kind of made me upset. I saw it the day after Father's Day. And the comment was, the person felt the need to put, don't say anything negative today about fathers, you know, it's their day and whatever, whatever. And that the comment itself offended me because no one was saying anything negative on my comment box or whatever it's called, the stream or the page. I'm like, I don't know why that was needed. That was the only negative thing I saw, the fact that you're saying not to say anything negative. And to me, I think don't say anything if you're not going to say anything right. Just allow for people to formulate their own opinions and judgments about Father's Day or fathers in general. So, I don't know. Like, when on Father's Day, did you feel appreciated? Because I know you noted that, that you know, we should have a Black Father's Day in lieu of or in addition to Father's Day.
No, you know, I was just joking when I said that.
Yeah,
but,
I know.
But the reality is sometimes is there's a lot of single mothers, right? There's a lot of great single mothers. And I'm not sure what this person intent meant, but I know something that I see that is kind of disturbing. You'll see a lot of times they'll say to the mom, well, happy Father's Day, because my dad wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a disservice to all the great dads there, because one, mom can be an excellent mom. She could be the world's greatest mom, but she can't be a dad, unfortunately, right? So I think it's a discredit when you say, well, she had to do both jobs. She can't do both jobs. She did a phenomenal one job, all right? She went beyond her duties as one job, but she didn't do two jobs. You know, that's like you going reporting to work and they, you know, you have your job and your coworker called out and you're doing their duties, but you still have one job.
Yes.
You see what I'm saying? You just went above and beyond. So a lot of times dads feel discredit or feel disservice when you hear these women going around saying to other women, hey, happy Father's Day. And I think that needs to stop.
I like that. And I think another piece of that is, and I had this conversation with, I don't even remember who it was, but when you look at our generation in particular, you see a lot of our peers, Black men, stepping up. Like they're in the household. They are harmonious with their spouse or what have you, ensuring that child is being raised. And if they're not with their spouse, they are still very active, at least the exposures that I have. And I know that you also noted a moment ago that you did what your father did. You did what your grandfather did when it came to instilling certain values in your son. So you had a guide, you had a model of that excellence in your household. So it of course doesn't just start with our generation. There is evidence that this has been happening from generation to generation. For some reason, I think media and even some, you know, areas that, you know, some communities for some reason want to expose this negative idea that black people don't have these harmonious families and these great family dynamics, when, like you said a moment ago, it does exist. So I want to talk a little bit more about your son. And you said he's at a place now where the statistics would show that, you know, he shouldn't be here because you were a young father. But in the case of you, that's not what happened. You were able to develop a strong young man with character. Talk a little bit about what those values were that you instilled and that you learned from your father and your grandfather.
Exactly. Well, you know, my son, so excited for him. He actually got a full athletic scholarship to East Carolina University. So I'm excited for him. He actually just left this week to start on his journey. But it started when he was younger. You know, one thing I knew is that I didn't want to set him off the wrong path, right? So that one thing I said to myself, I said, you know, I'm going to pray to make sure that I guide him. Because at 17, 18 years old, you're still learning yourself. You're not even fully developed. Mm-hmm. You know, you're still trying to find yourself. So here you go. You charge with the responsibility of a whole nother life, right? So what I did was I started looking and seeing what my dad would say, right? I would see the things he's saying, then try to understand the meaning behind it. Okay, well, why did he say these things? And I took the good and the bad. So with my son, a lot of times I would just, pass those values down. One was to always take care of your family. My dad told me that when I was young. He said, no matter what, he said, the true test of a man, you always take care of your family. Okay. Mm-hmm. And he instilled work ethic in us. You know, you have to go out there and be a provider. You know, so I understood that even at, you know, 17, 18 years old, you have to be a provider. Now, I wasn't providing a lot, but I was trying, going to school, playing ball and working. So you put those in it. And then he also, one thing my dad always taught us was, hey, in life, you have choices. You have the free will to do whatever you like, but there's a consequence for every choice you make, good or bad. And that's what I taught my son. I said, hey, you know, you have free will. But every choice you make, good or bad, it's going to be a consequence behind it. Mm-hmm. And the question is, do you want to live with that consequence? You know, I think sometimes as parents, parents kind of like put this tight chokehold on their kids. Hey, I want you to do X, Y, Z, whatever. But you got to allow the kids growth. You got to allow them to experiment. You got to allow them to go out and see the world within boundaries though now, right? Within boundaries. But you got to let them know, hey, you can go down this path, but there's going to be a consequence. Do you want to live with that consequence? And that's what I always kept telling them. And I think because of it, I kept reminding him, and I didn't sugarcoat stuff. I told him, hey, if you go down this path, these things are going to happen, especially living in the inner city, right? You know, you have gangs, you have drugs, you have, so many things that's going on, violence going on. And I tell him, hey, you can avoid these things, but if you get involved, there is going to be a consequence at the end of the tunnel.
Speaking of that, when you think of what's happening today, or not even today, it's just something that has been exposed, the George Floyd situation and so many others, that it's sad and it's despicable to even think that that's where we are even still today. When you think of that, how do you, I guess, ensure that your child is safe, because he is a Black young man growing up in this society as we know it? How did you, I guess, cultivate a sense of safety around him and empower him to still be who he is, but understanding the parameters around him?
Well, that's a great question. It's funny because I was talking to another dad before, wasn't African American. And I was saying, you know, it's weird when my son goes out, I have to prepare him just in case he has certain encounters with authorities. when your son goes out, you just let him go, right? So I had to prepare him, one, for compliance. You know, when you come across authorities, right or wrong, there's certain things that you have to do to comply so that you can make it home, okay? And it's unfair that we have to have that conversation, but you have to have it. For example, my son, you know, he's 18 now. So when his friends were 17 and they started driving and doing different things, I said, hey, you know, one of your friends, when he has a Caucasian friend he hangs out with that drives. And I told him, I said, if you guys get stopped, you know, you need to let your friend know, hey, man, we need to comply, because his act of defiance can be an issue for you. You know, and if that happens, you cannot ride with him anymore. You know, he can say whatever he wants. You don't have that luxury, you know, because unfortunately our color of our skin is a threat to them, you know. So even just one time I got pulled over, I would drive him up to his friend in that nice area, real nice area in northern New Jersey. And we got pulled over and, you know, very compliant. And I explained to the cop where we were going, because I understand, you know, they see us in a certain neighborhood. One, we're marked already. Why are you here? You know, they didn't read your license plate. They know you don't live in the area, right? So I explained to them where we were going. And, you know, explained to them, hey, my son goes to school with these guys. You know, we were just going to an event. And, you know, they tried to, unfortunately, we had a bad experience with the cops. But at the end, you know, we were able to live to another day. And I explained to my son, I said, this unfortunately happens too often, you know? And I told him that at a young age, this is what we have to deal with.
As a man, you know, and a Black man, what is the sentiment? What is the feeling after being in these situations? And I'm asking because I taught years ago in Trenton, and I taught at an alternative high school. And there would be times where my students, my male students, would come in to class in the morning, and I could sense something was off, like they weren't themselves. They didn't have, it almost seemed like they were drained of something. Something was taken away from them. And I remember speaking to this one particular student, and I said, what's wrong? Like, you seem off today. And he said, that he had an experience just coming to school. Literally, they would just throw these, young Black boys up against the gate or over the, you know, the front of the hood of the car and just bother them. They would be going to school or going wherever they're going, but it would just be this random encounter. And I saw what it looked like, you know, how he felt. I could see it. So I'm asking you, after having these encounters as a grown Black man, and of course, as a young Black man, it has to feel a certain way.
Mm-hmm. Well, one, it kind of takes your power away, right, as a man, because you know, no matter right or wrong, you cannot do certain things in a situation. So it's almost like emasculating you, right? Mm-hmm. And that's the whole purpose, because they know, hey, with that gun, they can say and do almost anything they want, and it will get away with it. So you have to be compliant. You can't be defiant. So, and doing it in front of your son, now it's like, you know, you feel weak almost. You know, because you have another man who literally at that moment has control over you. As a young kid, when it had experiences, your mind is going all type of anger. You know, as an adult, you deal with it a little different. But as a kid, you're very angry. You feel like you want to go fight the world, and you can't. That's the wrong response. But it has to be a place where these things have to stop. You know, because I know exactly how those young kids in your class felt, because it happened to me too often. 10 years old, I had a gun pulled on me by a police officer, a well-known police officer in my city. 18 years old, I had another gun pulled on me by a police officer. 21 years old, I had a gun pulled on me by a police officer. William Patterson Police pulled the gun on me, unfortunately. So, you know, in my 35 years, I had 4 experiences where I had guns pulled on me. And not one time have I had any type of criminal activity. So this is just typical stop and frisk, or, you know, traffic stops.
Wow. So I know that, you know, your son is now going into to college and all of that. Was there anything that you said to him imparting to kind of ensure that he still upholds the values that you've instilled in him since he was a little boy?
You know, I explained to him now, it's a little different. I explained to him now, you're 18 years old. So we talked about certain things getting to this point, but now you're actually judged as a young man, a man in the world. So you have to be careful of your actions, because one wrong turn, it could ruin the rest of your life. So I explained to him about, you know, gun safety and trying to apply for a gun later. And I said, most of the times, a lot of things they don't talk about is the reason police arrest young blacks in inner city for multiple reasons. But one thing, it messes up the ability to get a gun license. It also messes up your ability to vote. Two basic constitutional rights that, you know, they would take away. So I explained to him, I said, sometimes they'll try to put things on you just to take away certain rights. So I said, that's why you got to be careful your surroundings. You got to understand who you're with at all times and be careful what turns you make.
You know, you made a point about he's now judged as a young man as opposed to a child. And there's a part of me that doesn't believe that black boys and girls are judged as children when they are children. And a quick example, and this is, I've always kind of felt this way. They the way that young people are treated, even in a school system, when it comes to being disciplined at alarmingly more rates than their white counterparts, for things that really could have been addressed differently. But then also I was listening to a commentator, a white lady commentator, one morning, and I was just listening. I wasn't watching. And she was speaking to a young black girl about 9-10 years old. This little girl was so articulate, so, just so smart. She had created this program really so that she could give back, and she's doing all this work and in the community. She had help from her family and so on and so forth. And she's just sharing this information with this white lady commentator. And then at the end of the interview, the white commentator says to the little girl, she says, you know, I am really proud of your parents for raising such a smart young woman. I was like, young woman? This is a little girl. Mm-hmm. Why are you calling her a young woman? So, mm-hmm. And to me, it hit me differently. I think anybody else, it would have just kind of brushed over because it just seemed like a part of, but I know that that's how white people think of black people. Even as children, they look at them as older. And you also noted your experience as a child with, you know, law enforcement. They treated you like a grown person as opposed to a child. And so, you know, to me, we have to really teach our children very young what the expectations are. And, you know, like you said earlier, the consequences of just the most simple things that we do. So we have to be very cautious. And hopefully, like you said earlier, we're in a society now where we don't have to worry so much about that anymore, because people are starting to see the injustices that are happening to black people, black women and black men alike. So.
To touch on your point though, they can't see certain African-American as children, right? Because children are cute, they're cuddly, you know, you don't see them as a threat. So at certain points, I don't know what age group they stop classifying them as children, but they have to see them in a different light. Because why? If they saw them as children, then they will have to step up and say something to the injustice that are going on. So they're not children to them, in my opinion. You know, like I said, this is my opinion. So to your point, the reason she says that is because you're right. They don't see them as children, because you see a 6-year-old getting handcuffed, a 10-year-old getting handcuffed over a tantrum in school. I mean, if you think about it, that should be handled inside the school, but a police officer can come in and actually handcuff a 6-year-old. Who does that? Yeah. Because we don't view them as children. We view them as, you know, animals. We view them as, you know, however else they see them. And so I think that's why. They can't say, hey, they are children.
Yeah, it's a shame. But, you know, I guess to a softer point, I know that you have a daughter as well.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And she is so cute.
Well, thank you so much.
She looks like the cute little girl version of her dad. So mm-hmm. I wanted to kind of get into, you know, how Kobe, unfortunately, God rest his soul, you know, he coined the term girl dad. And I'm sure that comes with some feelings. It comes with some experiences that you as a father have with having a little girl. What does that mean to you? Like, how's that come about in your eyes and in your experience?
Mm-hmm. Well, having a young lady, excuse me, a young girl is an honor, all right? Because the way she looks at her dad is like a hero, right? So she looks at you like you can conquer the world. Like you have no type of chinks in your armor. And, you know, essentially, you know, a dad is the girl's first love, right? So I'm very conscious of, one, how I interact with her, how I speak to her, how I make sure I speak positive things into her all the time. You know, even when it comes down to discipline. You know, I'm very careful of words I choose. And my young lady is very good, so I typically don't have any issues. But if we do have a situation, I'm very careful of how I speak to the situation and not how I speak to her. You know, I always let her know, hey, well, I'm a little disappointed in this situation. I never say I'm disappointed in you. You know, I always encourage her. I always tell her how beautiful she is. You know, when I'm not home, I have flowers delivered to her. You know, so I make sure that she understands, hey, not only are you beautiful, you're smart, you can go conquer the world.
Now, how do you think that'll impact her as she becomes a young woman? Because right now she's a little girl, a young lady. As she gets older, the work that you're doing, the things that you're instilling in her, the value that you're allowing her to see in herself, how do you think that's going to play out? Or what do you hope is going to be the product?
Well, one, I want her to, you know, as a dad, you never want to see a little girl out there dating, right? But I want her to understand that, you know, she's a queen and that she shouldn't accept anything less than, all right? But that's why I make sure I do certain things, you know, even taking her to, you know, get her nails and feet done and different things like that, buying her jewelry, just to treat her and say, hey, you know, you're supposed to be treated a special way so that can't any Joe Smo down the street just come and just whisper sweet nothing in your ear and you okay with that? You know, he has to come a little bit harder because, hey, well, my dad already did all these things for me. He already showed me what a gentleman is.
I love that. How old is she, by the way?
She'll be 13 next month. So she's 12, 5'11", 12 years old.
What?
Yeah.
Does she play basketball?
Yeah, she plays basketball. We're starting her on softball now, too.
Is she good in these sports?
Well, she can be. When she tries, I say that when she tries, because she's very creative though. She loves art. She plays two instruments. She plays the saxophone and the violin. So sports to her is funny because she only want to play sports because she knows she'll go to college free. Like that's her thing. Like, all right, well, I'll just play because I'll get a scholarship. Because everybody around the neighborhood tells her, hey, because you're so tall, which is also we gotta be careful with that too because sometimes people put labels on them. You know, but she's very intelligent. She's like, well, I'm just going to play. I'll go to college free and then I'll do what I want.
That's right. She's 5'11". That's amazing. And how tall are you?
I'm 6'1", and my son is 6'2".
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And what position does he play?
He's a cornerback. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
That's great. So as a father, mm-hmm. What advice, as a Black father in particular, what advice would you give, you know, another Black father, of course, but also people? Like, what do you think would be something that all people, all fathers, all women should know about fatherhood?
Well, one, we have to be careful about, one, what their kids see, all right? Because you know, some people are visual learners, some people are audio learners and different things like that. So you have to be careful of what your children are watching you do. Typically, your children are watching everything that you do. Even if you don't think so, they're watching everything you do. And also how you speak to them. You know, so unfortunately, sometimes I hear parents speak so ill of their children. And they'll say, well, you know, they're bad or they're this or they're that. You shouldn't put those connotations on your kid. You have to always speak life into them. You say, hey, you know, I understand you did this thing and I'm disappointed in it, but you know, we should be going this way. But don't speak ill of them. You know, always encourage them. A lot of times, you know, especially growing up in the city, you'll hear certain moms tell their kids, hey, you're gonna end up in jail like your dad. Mm. And guess what happens? he ends up in jail like that because you spoke it. There's power in the tongue, all right? So you want to be mindful of what you say to your children at all times. Like, just to tell you, like, how my son got to where he was, when since he was young, I always told him, hey, you were the best. You know what I mean? I always said, hey, you're the best. Even when he didn't have a good day, I said, well, we didn't have a good day today, but you're still the best. You know, I always encouraged him. Hey, you know, we had a rough day today, but you're still the best. And I had him thinking every day, you know, every time he go out there, you're the best. You perform like the best. And in his mind, he couldn't be stopped. And it showed, same thing with my daughter. You know, I tell her how smart she is, you know, how creative she is all the time. I speak affirmations to her. And I make sure that she understands, hey, watch your tone. Watch what you say. You know, don't speak ill of yourself. She'll say, hey, well, I can't. Oh, no. Don't ever say I can't. Say I'm having a difficult time doing this, but don't ever say you can't do something. So parents, just be mindful of what you speak to your children. Also, what do you allow them to listen to? Because, you know, anything that you constantly hear over and over, you start to believe. You know, so just be mindful of what they're listening to over and over and over. For example, I could tell my son he's a king, but if he's listening to certain music that tell him he's the N-word all day, guess what he starts to believe? You know, the song that he heard 30 or 40 times. So you got to be mindful of what they're putting into their subconscious mind.
I love that. And one of the things you said earlier about your son is we had a bad day. You don't say you had a bad day. You also include yourself in it to show that we're in this thing together. Like, and this happens to the best of us. So I love that. We had a bad day. We're going to make up for this. This is mm-hmm. what we're going to do together. And even if it's kind of a hypothetical thing, I think it shows that he's not in it by himself, you know? Mm-hmm. So I appreciate you being here and spending some time with me talking about fatherhood and all the positive aspects of it. Of course, the things that we wish we could change. And I think if we put the work in, we can, when it comes to perceptions of who we are as Black people, but especially our Black fathers.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm grateful for the opportunity. It was a blessing to be here. And I think as a community, even when we don't see a dad there, you know, there's men in the area that should step up, you know, whether it's through mentoring programs, through coaching, through volunteering. You know, if you see a young man out in the street and you know that there's no man in his life, hey, hang out with him once in a while. You know, hey, let's go throw the ball. You know, tell me about your day. How can I be of service to you? You know, let's just not leave our little boys astray out here. They're looking up to somebody. And if they don't have a good male version to look up to, eventually they start to look up to the wrong things.
Thank you. I appreciate you for just your time and your wisdom and your insight as a father. So, guys, thank you so much. You're welcome. Thank you guys for being a part of this with myself and Mike Clerk. Hopefully you come back again, but please rate, subscribe, and comment if you haven't already done so. We'll talk to you guys soon. Bye.